Welcome back, everybody, to another deep dive. This time we are taking a look at companion planting, and specifically we're looking at how to use native plants to improve yields in your vegetable garden.
Yeah, this is a really exciting area, I think, because you know, it really gets to that idea of, you know, working with nature rather than against it.
Exactly. And the two resources that we're looking at today, one is a presentation by Eric Huselet for the Wild Ones Ozark chapter, and then also the book Pollinators of Native Plants by Heather Holm.
Yeah, both great resources for learning more about how to kind of create these little ecosystems in your garden.
Yeah, so first off, I think we should talk about pollination, because obviously without pollination, we're not going to have a lot of our favorite fruits and vegetables. So much of what we eat really depends on pollination. When we think about pollinators, most people probably think about honeybees.
Right, right. And honeybees are great, but they're not the whole story, right? Native bees are actually often much more efficient pollinators for a lot of our fruits and vegetables.
That's incredible. I had no idea.
Yeah, they're amazing little creatures, and they've really evolved alongside these plants.
So Eric, in his presentation, gave some really specific examples for planting with pollination in mind. And he talked about strawberries and how strawberries really benefit from medium-sized bees.
Yeah, and that's where native plants like golden ragwort or pale beard tongue or even wild hyacinth can really come into play. They attract those medium-sized bees right to your strawberry patch.
I see. So it's not just about having, you know, any flowers around. It's about having the right flowers.
Absolutely. It's all about having the right plants to attract the right pollinators for your specific crops.
So then he also talked about blackberries and raspberries.
Yeah, and those are interesting because they can be pollinated by a wider range of bees, from small to medium to large. So in that case, you'd want a slightly different set of native plants to attract that diverse crowd.
So what kind of plants would those be?
Well, things like Jacob's Ladder and New Jersey Tea are known to be real bee magnets.
I've never heard of those before.
Oh, they're beautiful, and they do a great job of supporting pollinators.
Great, so what about blueberries? Because blueberries, I feel like, are kind of picky.
You're right. Blueberries are a bit more specialized. So for blueberries, you're really looking at those medium to large bees again. And plants like spotted bee balm, eastern redbud, and wild geraniums are all great options.
Eastern redbud. I love those trees. They're so pretty.
Exactly. So you get this beautiful early spring display of color, and then you get those pollinators later on.
Double duty.
Yeah. It's all about getting the most out of your garden.
And then he talks about the nightshade family, so your tomatoes, peppers, and eggplants. And what I found interesting is he's saying those all have very similar pollinator needs.
Yeah, that's a great example of how you can group your plants not just by their growing needs, but also by their pollination needs.
And so what would you plant with your nightshades?
Well, some great options would be things like tall Coreopsis obedient plant and foxglove beard tongue.
Those all sound very beautiful, too.
They are, and they'll create a real haven for those pollinators your veggies need.
Now, what about green beans?
Green beans are fascinating because they really rely on bumblebees and those megachill bees.
Megatupes.
Yeah, it's a specific genus of bees, and they're really important for green bean pollination.
Okay, so how do we attract those?
Well, plants like common milkweed prairie, blazing star, and butterfly milkweed are all great choices.
Milkweed, I always think of that as being for butterflies.
Yeah, it's a host plant for monarch butterflies, but it also plays a really important role for bees.
I see. So, you know, even if we're focused on our vegetable garden, we're still having this bigger impact on the ecosystem.
Absolutely. You're creating this ripple effect of benefits throughout your garden and beyond.
Now, what about some of the summer crops, squash, zucchini, and melons?
Oh, those are heavy hitters when it comes to needing pollinators. They really rely on squash bees for pollination.
So how do we attract squash bees?
Well, Eric suggests things like sunflowers, Coreopsis, and even tall thistle.
Tall thistle, really? I mean,
I know it sounds surprising, right? But even those plants that we often consider weeds can play a really important role in the ecosystem.
So maybe we should rethink our definition of weeds.
Maybe. So maybe it's all about perspective.
And then cucumbers.
Cucumbers are another one that benefits from those sunflowers and Coreopsis. And again, more butterfly milkweed makes an appearance.
Butterfly milkweed is like the MVP.
It really is. It's such a versatile plant.
And finally, okra.
Okra, being in the mallow family, it makes sense that we'd want to plant other native hibiscuses, like rose mallow and swamp mallow.
Okay, so we've gone through a lot of different vegetables here, and I'm really starting to see how this whole idea of companion planting is really about creating this whole ecosystem in your garden.
It is. It's about thinking beyond just the individual plants and seeing how they all interact and support each other.
It's pretty amazing, actually.
It is. It's like a little world unto itself.
So what are your thoughts so far? Anything standing out to you?
Well, I'm really struck by just how much thought and strategy goes into this. It's not just about randomly throwing seeds in the ground and hoping for the best. It's about really understanding the relationships between plants and insects and making intentional choices to create a thriving and balanced garden.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point, that it's not just about, stuffing as many plants into your garden as possible. It's about creating this balanced ecosystem.
Exactly. And that's where the real magic happens.
Yeah.
It's about creating those connections and seeing how everything fits together.
And speaking of connections, I think we should transition now to talking about pest control. So we've talked about attracting pollinators now. How do we keep those bad bugs away? And this is where I think Heather Holm's book really shines, because she goes into a lot of detail about beneficial insects that can help control pests.
Yeah, she really emphasizes that idea of working with nature rather than against it.
So, we might see those aphids or caterpillars munching on our plants, and our first instinct is to reach for the pesticide.
Right, but often the best solution is already right there in our gardens.
Waiting to help us out.
Exactly. Nature has provided us with these amazing allies, and all we have to do is create an environment where they can thrive.
Okay, so let's meet some of these garden heroes.
Yeah.
Who are the beneficial insects that we want to attract?
Well, first we have to know who the bad guys are. Heather talks about some of the common garden pests like leafhoppers, aphids, thrips,
All
whiteflies.
those tiny creatures that can cause so much damage.
Yeah, but it's important to remember that they're part of the ecosystem too. Our goal isn't to eliminate them entirely.
Just keep them in check.
Exactly, it's all about balance.
Okay, so balance is the key. So how do we achieve that balance?
Well, that's where those beneficial insects come in.
Right, like the green lacewings.
Yes, green lacewings are fantastic predators. Both the larvae and the adults feed on a wide variety of pests.
And how do we attract them to our gardens?
Heather recommends planting things like common yarrow and daisy
And
fleabane.
then we have the syrphid flies.
Ah, yes, the aphid-eating champions.
Those are the ones that look like little bees.
Yeah, they're often mistaken for bees, but they're completely harmless to humans.
And they love to feast on those aphids.
They do, and they're drawn to plants like rattlesnake master wild quinine and purple prairie clover.
Now, what about for long-term pest control?
Well, for that, Heather highlights tachinid flies.
Tachinid flies, what are those?
They're these fascinating flies that parasitize other insects.
Parasitize.
Yeah, they lay their eggs on or inside other insects.
Oh, that sounds a little gruesome.
It is, but it's very effective for pest control. They target things like squash beetles and harlequin beetles.
And what kind of plants attract them?
Similar plants to the syrphid flies, actually, so you're getting double duty out of those plants.
That's great. And we can't forget about the soldier beetles.
Oh, yes, the soldier beetles are another aphid-eating friend. You often see them on goldenrods.
They're so pretty with their bright colors.
Yeah, they add a nice touch of beauty to the garden. And they're attracted to a variety of plants like swamp milkweed, common yarrow, and more.
So we've got lacewings, flies, and beetles on our pest control team.
We do, and we're just getting started.
Who else is there?
Well, for those dealing with beetle larvae and caterpillars, Heather recommends attracting thread-waisted wasps and scallied wasps.
Wasps. I try to avoid those.
I understand, but these wasps are actually very beneficial. They target those soil-dwelling pests, and they're particularly attracted to rattlesnake master and wild quinine.
Okay, and what about those Potter and Mason wasps?
Those are great for controlling caterpillars, too. They love plants like common yarrow, rattlesnake master, and wild quinine.
So those plants are coming up again and again.
They are. They're real workhorses in the garden.
And even though paper wasps can be a bit of a nuisance, they actually help control caterpillars and beetle larvae as well.
That's right. And they're attracted to similar plants as the other wasps we've mentioned.
So it seems like we're starting to see some patterns emerge here.
We are. There are certain plants that just keep popping up. They're like the VIPs of the beneficial insect world.
The all-stars of the garden.
Exactly. And those are the plants we really want to focus on.
Because they're giving us the most bang for our buck.
They're attracting both pollinators and those beneficial insects that help control pests.
It's like they're the key to unlocking a healthier and more productive garden.
Exactly. And the good news is that a lot of these VIP plants are actually pretty easy to grow.
That's good to hear. So let's talk about some of these specific plants. We've mentioned common yarrow a few times already.
Yeah, common yarrow is a real all-around winner. It attracts pollinators, beneficial insects, and it's even got some medicinal uses.
Wow, so it's like the triple threat of the plant world.
Exactly. And another one that really stands out is Rattlesnake Master.
Rattlesnake Master. Now, that one's got a really cool name.
It does, and it's got these unique, spiky flower heads that are just irresistible to bees and wasps.
And those wasps are the ones that are helping us control those caterpillars and beetle larvae.
That's right. So you're getting both pollination and pest control from this one plant.
And it's a native plant, so it's already adapted to our local climate.
Exactly. So it's going to be easier to grow and it's going to support our local ecosystem.
Now, what about wild quinine?
Wild quinine is another powerhouse for attracting beneficial insects, especially those aphid-eating syrphid flies and tachinid
So
flies.
this is the plant we want if we're having trouble with aphids.
It's definitely a good one to have in your arsenal.
And it's called wild quinine, but it's not the same as the quinine that's used to treat malaria, right?
Right, it's a different species, but it does have some similar medicinal properties.
Interesting. Okay, and then we have purple prairie clover.
Purple prairie clover is a beautiful one. It's got these lovely purple flower spikes that attract all sorts of pollinators.
And it's a host plant for butterflies, too.
It is. So you're supporting multiple levels of the food web with this one.
I love that. And I almost forgot about common boneset.
Common boneset is another great choice. It attracts a wide range of pollinators and beneficial insects.
And it's called boneset because it was traditionally used to treat broken bones.
That's right, although there's no scientific evidence to support that use anymore.
But it's still a great plant for the garden.
It is. It's definitely one of the all-stars.
Okay, so we've gone through a lot of information here about attracting pollinators, about attracting beneficial insects, about using native plants in our gardens. What are the key takeaways here?
Well, I think the main takeaway is that by choosing the right plants, we can create a garden that is both beautiful and beneficial.
And we can do it in a way that supports the local ecosystem.
Exactly. We're not just creating a garden, we're creating a habitat.
A haven for all those amazing creatures that we've been talking about.
And I think that's a really beautiful thing.
It is. It's inspiring to think about that we can make a difference even in our own small spaces.
We can, and I encourage everyone listening to give it a try.
Start small experiment. Observe.
And most importantly, have fun.
Gardening should be enjoyable.
Absolutely. It's a journey of discovery.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into companion planting with native species, what native plants will you try in your garden?
That's a great question. I'm excited to see what everyone comes up with.
And until next time, happy gardening, everyone.